Morning. Ooh,
it's a little light.
So thanks to everyone for coming out this morning to see our talk. It was a great lead in coming off of Bia and the other guy, Ranger speech. They were amazing, and we're kind of a logical extension from that. A little bit of an older set we're going to address, but Bia and Ranger's passion was particularly great. My name is Matthew Weinberg. I am currently a security analyst at a big bank down the street, but I came up through the ranks of the undergraduate and graduate curriculum in computer security, as well as international relations and political science, and introduce Ming.
And I'm Ming Zhao, and I'm from the Tufts University Department of Computer Science, senior lecturer over there. And we also want to give a special shout out in the morning to our colleague, Jeff Taliaferro, who I co-taught the course with, and he's here in spirit. Can't be with us today, but he's in spirit.
Yeah. So actually, getting first to the title of our talk, Lessons from an Undergraduate Course in Cybersecurity and Cyber Warfare, Is Our Children Securing? Now, I got a little bit of flack when I was actually proposing the title of this from my internal organization. Is our children securing? That's not grammatically correct. Well, you know, it isn't, but we actually had a former president ask the question in a speech, is our children learning? And I thought, well, maybe that's a good lead into what our main focus is for our talk, and that is, at a higher education level, are we really teaching our children about security in the way that we'd intend to? Are we really transcending boundaries in terms of getting the computer science department and other parts of the university together to combat some of the issues and teach about some of the issues that we're seeing now in the real world? So in this way, this is how we couch the talk, and we'll speak about how we went about doing it at the undergraduate level.
So I want to start off with a little motivation and to understand why we taught this course and the timing of it. Who was here at HOPE 2 years ago? Was anyone at the Crypto Wars talk with Matt Blaze and Sandy Clark? This was from one of the concluding slides in which Lily said word for word, we are now in a national cybersecurity crisis. And one of the last slides was the challenges that we face now. And I took a picture of the slide because it really still hits me up to this day in what the real hard problems in cybersecurity are. And the okay challenges, the good, moderately difficult challenges, the technology side of things. But the real hard problem in cybersecurity is really the policy and the legal parts of it, not the tech part, not the technical part of cybersecurity, but the legal and policy side of things. And you may be wondering, okay, so our talk is about a course, an academic course on cybersecurity and cyber warfare, which is a mix of tech and non-tech. You may be wondering, is there really a demand? I mean, is there a real demand for something like this? And the answer is absolutely yes, and here's two very crystal clear anecdotes. Michael Schulmeier, who is the director of the cybersecurity project at the Berkman Center at Harvard, actually asked on Twitter, when everyone have their conversations on Twitter, designing a cybersecurity course for law students. And on the right, we have Bobby Chesney, who's the associate dean at the law school at the University of Texas, even brought up, okay, what should a cybersecurity course and law and policy should cover. So this question has been, there's not only a need for this, but there's also a lot of debates and questions what should go on in such a very broad course.
So when I first joined, I guess, this project with Ming and Jeff Taliaferro at Tufts, we start off with some kind of core beliefs and actually laying out, what our main task is. And our core belief, at least between Ming and myself, was that the lack of progress that we saw in cybersecurity is due to the knowledge and the cultural gaps between the technical and the non-technical communities. And I have a former dean at the Fletcher School, Dean Stavridis. He always would talk about building intellectual bridges between communities. And so in this course, we were really looking forward to building bridges between the communities of political science and international relations, which is a strong suit at our university, with the computer science department, and having the two student bodies come together and share what they know and what they've learned with each other to overcome particular challenges. So that was our task. That's what we really set out to do. Now, in terms of each community itself and addressing them, the political science and international relations, so PS and IR in short speak, it was to expose them to a lot of the technical aspects of cybersecurity, which, as you can see in their daily lives right now, you know, have emerged as important aspects of the international security environment. So it was really important for them to kind of understand what is really at root with a lot of the issues that we see from the technical perspective that are going over into the political science in the IR domain.
And so, also, the course come at perfect timing, because we're now at a time where, and I'm sure a lot of you folks are questioning, you know, you're paying this much money to go for 4 years at a private institution, like, what are you really getting out of your money? And I can say that I actually got my hands on the external review from political science and international relations at Tufts, and it was very interesting reading them about like what needs to be, like what are the content really necessary in order to boost the program up to, you know, the modern times. And this course actually was became a boon for not only computer science, but also for the international relations and political science programs at Tufts. And the computer science then want to expose, you know, just basic policy making and to the students. Just as interesting, because recently I was a little bit too slow to read Kate Charlotte's paper on federal cybersecurity, which she published back in April of 2018. And in the introduction, I think she wrote something along the lines of, it's easier for me to teach tech to policy people, but it's much, much more difficult to teach policy to techies. So interesting line that she wrote in her report that coincide with the mission of this course.
But you know, at the end of the day, really is what we're trying to do is hack the higher education system. And in the way, like much hacking, like we had seen Bia and Ranger discuss earlier, you know, we had to make this course practical, fun, and enlightening for the students, because otherwise we were sitting in here in a long room and it wouldn't be fun for anyone. No. You know. So we really had to make it interactive amongst themselves to encourage the students themselves, much like our university talks about, is to encourage active citizenship. So to encourage active info security citizenship and to engage across all these different communities that we had in the course and all the different backgrounds that we had, whether it be gender, whether it be educational, to have healthy debates between themselves while they were in the course.
Yeah, and let's be honest, that stuff doesn't happen, and I'm sure for most of us who've been in, you know, been to like college before, it doesn't happen that often. I mean, we're still in a dinosaur age system in which, you know, it's become academic fragmentation when you have like the mathematics department, you have political science stand on its own, physics stands on its own. But you take a look at the big modern problems now, like cybersecurity, they transcend and blend multiple departments and even schools within an institution. I mean, those days of just standing on your own and just locking yourself behind the door, those days are long over.
But we're not the only ones trying to do this out there, and we want to actually give some props to other universities and other programs that are actually doing much what we are doing as well, and we also learn from each other as well. So there is actually a community of these types of courses that are out there. Give a shout out to my former professor at Harvard right now, Bruce Schneier, who a lot of you probably do know. He teaches a cybersecurity technology policy and law course, the Harvard Kennedy School, as well as down the street at Columbia University, Jason Healy and his program, along with Steve Bellevin and Matt Waxman, teach a course in also technology policy and law at Columbia, and they run an excellent program up there and running also outside the classroom some other unique and interesting events that we'll get into later. So what did this actual class look like? You know, it was pretty well divided between the political science and international relations departments, as well as the computer science department. The wedge that you see at 9% there are unicorns. So they are our dual majors. They will have excellent futures out there, particularly because they understand from an inherent basis the technological as well as the political and all the other human organizational aspects of what we are encountering in this world. But having said that, what our main goal was to make sure that at least on either side of the aisle of education, that we had both sides kind of understanding where each other was coming from, so that when they do go out and enter into the career field and the professional world, they can understand quite a bit of the issues that either is facing.
Yeah, and also, we'll mention this a little bit. I'm sure you're wondering what the, I'm sure with any class these days, a lot of people are asking what's the breakdown in terms of like gender? And we made it largely 50-50 as best as we could. So it wasn't skewed like in all gender and one side versus some other, like a lot of classes. Technical topics. So what did we cover in terms of technical topics in this cybersecurity and cyber warfare course? To make a long story short, we didn't do anything elaborate in that, we didn't do anything elaborate or that special. We went through a lot of the real basic tools such as, you know, Nmap, Shodan, what Kali Linux is, the basic terminologies and vulnerability disclosures. And, you know, we glossed over, you know, at a very high level, we didn't go too deep into things like malware and Internet of Things. But overall, in terms of the technical topics, it wasn't anything special. No reverse engineering, there was no coding. We didn't get into the math behind crypto. We didn't do any of that stuff.
And on the policy side, we also started out a lot with the basic international relations theory for computer scientists to understand, you know, things of what is realism, what is deterrence theory, you know, some of the basics, but what drives, you know, our international order we discussed. Then we also, of course, got into the privacy and surveillance debates. We got into what is cybercrime and criminology. We talked a lot about a really hot topic now in terms of information operations and information security and how it relates back to cybersecurity, as well as what is the public and the private sector, what are they doing together, what are they not doing together in terms of securing our nation and our world. Of course, we take some of actual practical works that are out there right now in the studies field. So, of course, one of the hot books right now is by Thomas Ritter, who's down at the School of Advanced International Studies down at Johns Hopkins University, wrote an excellent book called Cyber War Will Not Take Place. We also previewed a movie called 0 Days from Alex Gibney. Maybe some of you have already seen it. Revolves a lot around the Stuxnet and the debates thereafter around the weaponization and use of or subversion of industrial control systems in Iran. And then lastly, give a shout out to my friend Trey Hare and as well as Richard Harrison, who have created what I think is one of really strong books out there, compiling a lot of great works on the contemporary issues in cybersecurity as they relate to the international environment. So we had students sample different readings from there as well. But having said that, when I first entered this course to kind of assist Ming and Jeffrey with the course creation, we also wanted to make sure that it was practical for the students. So it wasn't us just handing a syllabus and saying, you're gonna read this and you're gonna read that. We also on the computer science side didn't necessarily need to do as much training. We wanted to focus and get them oriented towards the different tools, like Ming said, but we also weren't necessarily going to address everything, so.
Yeah, and of course, you know, one of the funny computer science questions that I'll always get from any course is, oh, what programming language that we're gonna use? So when I actually said, we're not gonna do any programming, it was a little bit of a culture shock to a lot of students, and I guess, you know, loosely speaking, it just shows how brainwashed, you know, some of the students can be, you know, sometimes when you go through a program like this. But as I said earlier, you know, in terms of the technical topics, we didn't do anything that was special. The whole point of this course, you know, it wasn't to build like any in terms of any depth. The more important thing is an age-old, something I learned from Ed Felton when I first got into cybersecurity in 2004, was the important goal of this course is not only to build bridges, to have people talk to each other, but also to be informed. What are the big issues out there facing us in terms of cybersecurity? It's just the informed piece. Not to go delve into the weeds and have people talk to each other. That was the main goal. But if you did want to do things like packet analysis, password cracking, I take my security course, which the content is actually all free. I'm actually currently teaching it online this summer at this moment as we speak. It's all free, the content out there. Most labs, well, except for the Capture the Flag game, I haven't put that up live yet. We did have a couple students that took this course first, then went to cybersecurity, and I do know I have one student here. That's AOG.
Okay. So what did we actually do to make this all practical and actually interesting? First thing first, Ming, who has extensive experience running and halving Capture the Flag, administering those kinds of events. We actually, of course, laid out, we're going to do a Capture the Flag to start out with the course. But I kind of came in and said, well, that's all great. And yeah, you can have someone from the Political Science Department, International Relations Department students sit next to the computer science student as they go through capturing the flag and whatnot. But what is it really going to be of benefit to both here? And oftentimes I see a lot of Capture the Flag contests, and they're done in isolation. They're done without any inkling of how does this CTF actually apply to what we've seen in the real world. I want students, when they're doing this, to feel like, okay, this CTF that I just did actually matters and connects to some things that have actually happened. So I told Ming, I said, we really need to add to the Capture the Flag challenge or the write-ups. And we have to say, okay, so you've gone through this CTF. What is it you actually see here, and name us some particular policy implications or actual events that you've seen out there that tie back to the activity that you just went through.
And that line, what Matt just said, really still blows me away, and I'm very thankful that I learned that from, and I'm very, very happy and very thankful Matt brought that up. Because I'll be honest is that I've fallen into that trap as well with, because I've seen so many Capture the Flag games, I've seen, I've read a lot of write-up, and it's all the same thing. But the real game changer with the version of Capture the Flag that we had was when Matt brought up the idea of, in the write-up, we also got to have the students to connect the things that they found in the game and connect them to the real world. I'll give you two very concrete examples from this game to mirror exactly what Matt said. So if you're interested, what the Capture the Flag, the box was, it was just a Windows 2008 server unpatched with Hack Me Casino running, and the administrator password was password. It was the same one that was used in John Podesta's Gmail account in the DNC hack in 2016, and some students recognized that password. Yeah, this password looked familiar. It was the same one that John Podesta used, and we wanted them to recognize that. Another one, there was SQL injection in the game, and one team wrote, yeah, this was the same attack that was used for the whole Mossack Fonseca mess. And that was like, bam. That's exactly what we wanted to get across. So to connect this with previous incidents.
Now, why did we do that, actually? Well, part of it was the policy implications. But when these students actually go out in the real and working world, they're going to be working, whether they're from political science, international relations, whether they're computer scientists, together on issues much like that. So we wanted to have the gender diversity involved, we wanted to have the different backgrounds involved, and also, you've got the practical problem that software always doesn't work. So we wanted to actually have them come together in a kind of a real-world situation to work together on this, and that was the most important thing that we discovered through that kind of practical exercise. Now, the next thing that we did with the students is something that you kind of see more of in the policy world, but it's also really important for computer scientists evermore today as well. I call this, did you happen to get that memo? Because what you often see in the working world, especially whether you're in DC or up here in New York, on Wall Street, wherever, your bosses have very little time. They have very little time to understand maybe a 10-page thing or whether you coded something. But what we really were trying to get at with the students was communications, whether they could write for brevity, clarity, and accessibility. Can you distill down some of the technical topics that you're seeing and explain it to someone who may not have the similar technical background as you, or if it's a policymaker, still try to explain, you know, what are the technical dynamics that you're seeing? So what we directed the students to do was take any issue of their interest and direct that particular issue to a C-suite executive, a senior policymaker, someone in civil society, and write really clearly 2 pages to that particular audience.
Did anyone want to take a guess? It was just, it completely blew me away still. When Matt was working, he met with each and every one of the students, well, especially during the last minute. Does anyone want to take a wild guess what were the number one and number two, number one and the number one mistake that a lot of students made? It was right off the bat. It was mind-blowing. Does anyone want to take a guess what the number one mistake that every student made?
Yeah, there's some of that, yeah.
Yeah, there was some of that.
Some of that, yeah.
Yeah, there was that too.
No, not that. That would have been funny if they actually did that. I think part of it is, there's something about being it long and whatnot, and we were able to work on that. But really getting your point up front. In the intelligence business, you have what's called the bottom line up front or the bluff. But really having the students think hard about what they wanted to communicate up front to their senior leader decision maker. For all of us, it's really hard. For me, it's still hard as a professional.
And I remember from Matt, what he kept on asking each and every one of the students was, okay, first things first, for whom? Mm-hmm. What was this memo for?
Yep. So, and that actually ties back into my last point here, in that just writing a 2-page memo is a process for self-discovery. What do I want to write about? And how do I write to that person, that audience that Ming just brought up, in a way that they're going to understand and that's going to help them make a decision? So in that whole process, I think there was a self-discovery piece of not only just as themselves as communicators, but also what they're really interested in to really distill down what is the important issue that I want to tell someone else. Okay. Now the third engagement, what we call the student pep talks. So PEP, I think this was an original idea coming from Ming, but we altered it a bit along with Jeff. But PEP means personal engagement projects. And you know, the main thing that we tasked the students to do was go out there in the information security community or the policy communities and really try to find where your niche is. I had a talk once. Jason Healy came up to Tufts. He had a really good, interesting story about someone, one of his students who come up to him, and the students was like, I'm, you know, gonna do this and this, and Jay's like, well, you know, everyone else is in that area. What's your unique niche? What really drives you outside of, you know, when you're in the classroom, you know, something that's from your background that you spent a lot of time on, you know, something that you'll do when you're, you know, away from the field. And you know, he's like, oh, I really like maritime studies, and I'm, you know, on the water a lot. And he's like, well, you know, really focus. Maybe your niche is, you know, maritime cybersecurity. There's a huge need for that out there. So what I really took from that is, you know, for all the students that I met with, you know, every other day in the Hall of Flags up at Fletcher, and really talking to them and trying to understand, you know, why are you in this course and what really drives you when you're not out of it? And let's see if there's a particular connection point between the two. So from there, we tasked the students, okay, now get into that area.
Well, 2 things. It's number one is we can't teach everything. There's no way. But number two, what really still bothers me up to this day is there's a lot of people that, A, don't understand that cybersecurity is a very broad field, and that there are many different paths and avenues to get to your, to do cybersecurity. There are many people that have many different interests. Some people may absolutely hate the technical piece but love the legal piece. Some people may love the technical piece but may actually really don't want to do law or talk about the policies and rules. Some people may actually want to think about cybersecurity in a non-private sector. Some people want to learn about cybersecurity in a startup. Some people want to do cybersecurity in a mega corporation. There are many, many different avenues, many, many different flavors, and we want to have that student exposed because you're not going to get that out of the classroom. So again, going back to Matt's point, making this course practical. And the other thing is that I tell everyone is, and I'm sure this is a problem with education in general, just doing the classroom work is not good enough.
And I think the main thing that we're actually driving these students towards is into the community. So all of you are here today, and you're all at Hope because, you know, you want to be involved with each other, you want to meet each other. And for the students, a lot of them, this is their first time being exposed to the information security community. So a lot of them came back from events like at B-Sides, or they go to Berkman Klein, or they actually go tour an office like from Black Duck Software or elsewhere in the Boston area and see some of this professionals who work there, and they come back really rejuvenated and energized about this field. So it was that practical experience of taking what they've learned and putting in these pep talks and getting in front of their fellow students as well, like what Ming and I are doing, and giving a talk on, you know, what they're passionate about. That was the real takeaway.
So actually, two quick things. Well, a little bit just on the side note here. I saw, like, I got in yesterday, I hope, and I saw that there was like some school had a field trip. It seemed like, wait, some school have a field trip here at Hope? And it shows, well, I think it was St. John's that brought like a whole crew here at Hope. That's really damn cool. That's really, really cool. And I always remind students that during my 4 years in college, I didn't learn a damn thing about this. I didn't even know the cybersecurity thing even existed until I went to USENIX annual conference in 2004.
So after all these experiences, what did we actually learn? So here are some release notes that we have. We'll go through features, bugs, other things as well that we took from this experience. So what did we think we did with this course? One is, I think, as best as we could, addressed a lot of the diversity shortcomings that we're seeing in this field, you know, whether it be from educational background, from gender mix in the actual work of cybersecurity. I think we did a pretty good job of getting the students mixed and creating those bridges there. The timing was actually pretty helpful because it was in a high demand course. Students, of course, see everything in the daily news right now related to cybersecurity, whether it be a breach or an election system hack. You know, students from all different backgrounds are really interested in this topic now, so that really helped us out. And then lastly, you know, I think we really planted the seeds with some of our students, and we'll show some of the results later on. We also have some of the students here today. So I think, you know, we actually succeeded in, you know, getting, you know, an actual glide path for some of these students into the field. So I think we have some pretty, we should be pretty proud of that. Mm-hmm. Now, bugs.
Some things that we learned that we got to do better on the next time. One of the biggest comments from students was they wanted more talking, more collaboration, more debates. There was a lot of comments, like, you know, especially from the CS students, like, when in the world is Rule 41? One of the things that we're considering for the next iteration is to have both sets of students to do like quick 2-minute videos on a particular teaching the other side of the aisle on a particular concept. So, for example, a good one for computer science students is, what is TCP/IP, or how does the web work? Simple videos like that. Or the real basics of how I'm going to pull something out from the policy, and I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, just basic, you know, for instance, how does an election system work? I think it's a pretty popular topic nowadays. So how does civic engagement work? So having a student from the political science department talk about different ways in which voting happens around the world, that would be, I think, a pretty pertinent topic for some cross development teaching.
Yeah. Classroom environment, this is not only an issue with, but I think this is a more broader, more general, and a more global problem. Is you take a look at most classrooms these days, they're still very much like the seat and desk, like this kind of style, in which, and it's not like an open lab for, you know, team-based learning, for doing project, and the room wasn't set up like that. We do have some spaces now at Tufts, actually, I like that. And again, more class debates. You know, because debates are healthy, but if you don't understand both sides of the pros and cons and the trade-off, you don't really understand the full issue.
Some of the smaller issues that we encountered while conducting the course, you know, the academic system at a lot of higher educational universities is still based off of a pretty set 13 weeks for a semester. So the best we could really do is lay the groundwork on a lot of issues. So we're not expecting our students to know everything when they get out. What we're expecting is to get them involved in the community so that we give them a good foundation so that they can continue to engage and participate. We also, you know, taught in Boston, Massachusetts, and we actually taught in the beginning of the winter. So of course, the weather and getting people from the community to come, there's always gonna be hiccups around that. We had to reschedule some CTF games, some guest speakers had to miss, but you know, that's just the nature of teaching in a really cold Northern university. And then lastly, the interesting thing, I don't know if this is necessarily an issue, but it's definitely something if you're teaching these courses that you have to keep in mind of, in that the cybersecurity field is really dynamic. So we'd be sitting in classes and, you know, maybe Jeff would be teaching one day or I would be standing up in the middle of the room and Ming would be, you know, rifling through Twitter and something would change fundamentally in cybersecurity.
Oh, right, like SHA-1 was broken in February 2017. It was during the middle of class that happened too. Also, the timing can also work against us as well too, because I think it was like one or two weeks after the course was over, WannaCry happened.
Yeah, so I mean, you have to be on your feet. Like, the syllabus and the pre-planning that you do for these courses that higher education traditionally does, you have to be able to kind of think on your feet and innovate, because like I said, the issues are changing. So some things that we had in the syllabus at the original portion of front end of it, we'd have to change and vice versa. So, you know, flexibility was pretty key. So some further lessons learned. Vocabulary is an issue. All of you know this in the information security fields, how we name threat actors or how we name, you know, actual viruses, how we name different terminology, the acronyms that we use. It's always an issue, and there's not even agreement within the cybersecurity field. And then when you get to the political science and the international relations field, with their own acronyms, with their own terms, they have their own language. So really in this course, we needed to make sure that both sides understood what we meant when we said certain things.
So here's a real good example. Even the most basic stuff, how many people have a problem who here have a problem with the term, the word cyber? Like, who has a problem? Okay. So for those of you like that, like you have, it's like cyber is put in, is tagged into everything now. Cyber Pearl Harbor, okay? We hear that as well too.
Cyber 9/11.
Yeah, Cyber 9/11. And I know, especially with some communities out there, they call it InfoSec instead. But is that really the best term? But on the flip side of things, if you do this on the government side, they all use cybersecurity. And then a more pickier part, is a cybersecurity one word or cybersecurity two words? You be the judge.
And the other surprise is, you know, from the non-technical students, they wanted more technical content. When we actually had the survey come back, a lot of their responses were, we want more technicals, and so, you know, next time.
That surprised us. I think that really surprised us. I don't know what it was, and of course, one of the things, of course, I'm still bugged by this, is it because a lot of students are afraid, they never had the foundation? I know at Tufts, many people who take an intro to computer science course, they didn't never take an intro ever before from like high school or elementary, for a K-12 level. I don't know. That was really, really shocking to me, is that it was a huge demand from the non-tech, from the IR political science, and we want more technical, like we want to know more about the tech side of things. Like, oh.
And then the last thing, I think, just in our courses, we would highlight, much like we've done in this presentation, you know, different people from the community and what they've said. And I think for a lot of our students, they come from all different backgrounds, alternative backgrounds, whatever path they've been on to information security. But just showing them, you know, particular role models that are out there, what they've done and what they've said, just to show that there are actually people out there that when they exit the class, they can continue to learn from. And then also saying, you know, what path you're on is not necessarily, everyone comes from different weird paths. There was a really good Twitter thread last March around my weird path to InfoSec. Maybe some of you participated in it. But, you know, just the diversity of how people get into this field, I think is kind of encouraging to a lot of folks who may think they're new or may have imposter syndrome, that, you know, we can all get into this field and all have something unique to contribute as long as we have a passion for it.
So we'll mention a little bit more about that and when we talk about the results.
Yep. So what are we going to do next time?
So every computer science program now is jumping on the ethics bandwagon. also, it's surprising that not a lot of computer science programs are not jumping on the basic civics bandwagon. Actually, that's starting to happen with all the election security stuff. So that's actually good to see. But I can tell you, in fall of 2019, we will be offering a course called Computer Science for Future Presidents. Now, this is not meant to be a course to train, you know, to make non-technical political science, international relations students into computer science. That's not the goal of the course, but it's to address that shortcoming, as we just mentioned, about the non-technical students want more of the technical content. And I want to give a shout out and thanks to the Hewlett Foundation for their support for making this course happen. And this course will be run, it's a joint course between computer science and the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy. And so you may be curious, I'm actually in the middle of writing labs for this course right now, just working with Susan Landau on building this course. And the topics that we're going to have are going to be include like how the internet works, cloud, and how the internet work, how the web work, cloud and IoT, privacy and security, cryptography, and things like machine learning and fairness. And blockchain, is it really worth it, or is it really hype? Like, what's worth it, what's hype? And it's gonna be, you know, they're gonna have, the labs are gonna be all hands-on. You know, there's no programming, but you're gonna do things like crypto challenges. Shouldn't say this too loud, but I guess I'll say it right now. Is that I already put together like hashes of like LinkedIn breach passwords? Understand things like the 99, the 5-9 concept in cloud.
Yeah. So what did this actually lend itself in terms of results from the course? And we actually had some pretty good results even, you know, just towards the end of the course itself. So a couple of our students actually participated in a Belfer event up at Harvard, and here they are, two of our students, on a Defending Digital Democracy kind of hackathon, civic hackathon, you know, looking at some of the, you know, misinformation, disinformation problem set up there. There, between them is a guy you might be familiar with. He was a former Secretary of Defense, Ash Carter. Under Obama, he was the SecDef at the Pentagon. And the two students actually took on the grand prize of $10,000 for an app that they developed called Sanity Check to look into how they could leverage natural language processing and, you know, bot detection, source grade listing, all those sorts of things to really get in combat against the misinformation problem that we've seen a lot recently and within the 2016 election. So actually applying some of the policy issues that they were seeing, some of the technical skills that they had, this is actually a group of two excellent, excellent young female professionals now in the field.
Give a shout out to both Gabby Roncone and Winona DeSombre. I'll mention her a little bit next.
And, you know, just taking what they've learned and really applying it to a real big problem set in the civic space. And then as well, the other thing I really want to give a huge shout out to, and it's kind of like the mock trial or the debate club of the 21st century, and that is the Cyber 912 competitions that are occurring here in New York. There's one in November up at Columbia University run by Jay Healy and the Digital Cyber Group up there, but there's also a national one down in the DC in mid-March where students get together coming from all different backgrounds, whether it be legal backgrounds, whether it be policy backgrounds, whether it be computer science backgrounds, and they come together and they're confronting a particular situation within, you know, a public security situation, international security situation, and they have to go in front of, like we had in the course, a policymaker to really advise what should I be doing at this course of this part of a particular event, and getting in front of judges like you see in this picture, and performing their recommendations for really senior policymakers in a lot of these events, as well as practitioners in the field. And it really gets students, you know, up there like we are doing here today and communicating out the issues in a succinct as well as in a understandable fashion what is going on in cybersecurity and how it's really affecting the public. So our students actually went down to DC and took the crown of, you know, best public speaking performance down there. They went to the semifinals as an undergraduate group, which is quite impressive given that a lot of the top schools coming from the military as well as the grad school community. We're really quite proud, and it actually takes a lot of preparation. So students are preparing at least a month, you know, three times a week, getting together for hours on end, actually going through the scenario and planning out how they're going to brief the policymakers.
Yeah. And so you may be curious, where did the students, you know, the 40-something students end up going? And I can tell you right now, whether it was computer science and political science, a good number of the students ended up doing something cybersecurity related. Four of them went to MITRE. Four of them are there now. One's an intern. Three of them are full time. One's a business analyst at Clutch.io.
We have threat intel analysts, so actually someone actually transcending the boundaries of strategic threat intelligence as well as the technical side of intelligence. Yeah. Again, unicorn, but you know, these are the kinds of people we're trying to churn out, people who understand both the policy as well as the global dynamics.
Who went to FireEye? One non-computer science student went to FireEye. Yeah.
And there, they're actually grappling with a lot of the issues that we're bringing up in these courses, like how do I analyze what's going on out there in the world and bring it back to the technical side and what's developing.
So I want to mention Winona DeSombre. So what she did, she's at Recorded Future now, but she did something really, really cool. And she wrote a piece on threat analysis insights. It's available. But what she did was she wrote a piece on how she got her, you know, how she got her position and how it was made possible by not only her studies in computer science, but also in international relations. And that was really good for a reason, because I see this, and Matt, I know you did this with political science and IR, is a lot of the students, actually even in computer science too, everyone have such a narrow mind of career option. I mean, computer science students nationwide, they say, oh, I'm gonna Google Microsoft, Facebook, and Apple. IR, international relations, and political science students, they think about, oh, going into government. But those opportunities are far few in between these days. And Winona wrote a piece, there's a lot more than just the usual suspect of things. So you can do things like threat intel, that where you can use actually both worlds.
Yep. And then, I mean, we've actually got our students contributing to how we as a federal government, how we as an international community, actually organize around this effort, because there seems to be a lot of disorganization out there on what is the government's role, what is the private sector's role. So we have students actually going out to think tanks now and to other places and actually making their mark in the policy field as well as in the technical fields. I kind of want to wrap up now because we're getting close to the end. Just giving some shout outs to some really important people that have helped us throughout the course. As we mentioned, Jeffrey Taliaferro, who, if we could be here, like, we'd definitely give him a lot of the stage as well from his perspective. But Susan Landau as well at Tufts University, amazing, amazing talent in the security privacy debate that you should definitely read her works on. Michelle Malvesti, my former advisor up at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy, made a huge mark on how we teach at the graduate level cybersecurity and cyber conflict, as well as
Course, Kathleen Fisher, who's been fantastic as chair of computer science, but very, very, very supportive of all the cybersecurity initiatives that we've been doing. I speak the world working with her.
And we also have to thank our funders. So we got some funding and support through the Tufts Innovate grant. They underwrote the course development as well as the execution. We also had some particularly important people who came in and spoke.
Yeah, Cade Crockford, with the ACLU in Boston, Eli Kahn at Squirrel, gave a guest lecture. This was before Squirrel got acquired by Amazon. And Seth Milstein, he works around the area, but he can't make it. I asked him, are you going to be around? And he said, actually not going to be around. But again, he's in spirit. We can't thank him enough.
And each of these people, like I said, getting in front of these kinds of students, telling about your experience of how you were in the field and what you do in the field was particularly helpful. So we really like to thank them for kind of sharing their experience, as well as we shouted out to a lot of colleagues during this from across academia. But again, there are a lot of great programs out there. There are a lot of budding programs. So if you all out in the audience can get involved and help your local university, advertise yourself, whether to be to help students or to come in and speak or to participate in a Cyber 912 or CTF or what have you. You know, we really encourage you out there to get involved, because there's negative unemployment in the cybersecurity field. There is a need for radical inclusion to get people from all different backgrounds to become involved in this field. We tend to have gender imbalance now. We have a background imbalance now, and we need to build bridges. So, like I said, the charge is for all of you to get involved in raising the next generation. We saw it earlier here amongst the younger set, and now I'm telling you, in the older set, they also need your support as well. Yep. So, open up for any questions.
Thank you. So we'd love to have questions. Question, please.
Hey guys, great talk. You mentioned a little bit about how the teaching spaces that you were working in weren't necessarily the best for what you were doing. I was wondering if some of the pedagogy that you came into the course with also needed to kind of adapt and improvise. And you know, if what would you use now that you know what you know now?
So I think that on the pedagogy side, you know, like I said, getting rid of that kind of syllabus model and really testing out the students and, you know, changing the way they interact with each other in the class. On this physical infrastructure and space side, you know, really building out, if you go into the cybersecurity world now, a lot of these teams are in open floor space kind of offices, and they're working across different functions within the cybersecurity, whether it be a fusion center or a SOC. So really getting them to kind of gel together. So I think from a pedagogy standpoint, getting away from the old model, taking a new model with student experiences, and then changing up how the infrastructure is, I think is the next step.
Yeah, and that everyone has to wear the same hat, you know, in learning. And if you saw from the previous presenter's talk, I'm sorry, but those days are over. Doesn't work anymore.
Next question.
So I'm currently a student at Towson University in Maryland. We have a pretty decent cyber
program. In where?
Towson.
Oh.
Great school.
I know our ethics class is pretty much universally hated. Mm-hmm. And I want to know, like, how did you make it exciting for the technical people?
I think you really have to show how it applies to what's going on in the real world. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to bring up, you don't have in business school and law school, like, case examples. Mm-hmm. Like, we're really in the syllabus selection and the content, you know, actually brought in the cases of, you know, why this is relevant and important.
I mean, you just get it. Right now, the biggest problem I see is the lack of connection between what you're learning. And I see this all the time is, okay, you're learning this stuff in the classroom. And by the way, a lot of examples are stolen from like other things. Like, for example, the ethics example, have you heard of that trolley example? Like, if you have an automated car, like, what would you do? Would you like to run over the people or X, Y, and Z? Like, have you heard of that example?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, Greg, I'm not sure.
Okay. Thank you. We have 3 minutes, so hopefully we get two more.
This was a great talk. I did not expect it to intersect so closely with my work, and I was very pleased that it did. I'm a software engineer that advises the federal government on modernizing their internal network security mm-hmm. policy, which is terrible, for the record. And the biggest problem that I have is not the non-technical people. It is the policy people that started off as engineers and made the jump like 20, 30 years ago to policy and do not realize that their understanding of trade-offs and threats mm-hmm. are out of date. Yep. So I have a question about your rules with the capture the flag teams and the diversity of the way you constructed teams, which I thought were very interesting. But I was wondering, how do you feel the students processed those set of rules? Did they understand that they were building stronger teams by having a diverse group of people? Mm-hmm. Or do you think that if you hadn't had those rules, they would have just fragmented themselves and would have thought, this is great, we produced high quality work?
I'm gonna let you take that one first.
I think it's a good question. I think, you know, starting out, you don't really want to tell the students why you're putting them through a certain way. But I think after they themselves realize why we put them in certain situations and then team arrangements like they did and why we asked them certain things, we would explain to them after why we ran it through.
Yeah, I don't, sometimes especially, the trade-off, I mean, again, it's a trade-off problem. If you bring this up,
yeah.
Let's say if I brought that topic up, how we create a team, so everyone, if that's going to be etched in everyone's brain. And that could actually even raise even more questions that's not related to CTF game. So that could even raise even more questions. So what we decided to, okay, here it is, ask questions later. I felt that was a trade-off that we had to make.
I think we can squeeze in one more question.
Okay. I originally had two. I'll make them real fast. Did you discuss the Google versus Oracle Java case at all and how the judge taught himself to engineering and now has been overruled? And the other is, do you plan to put this on Coursera or OCW so people have the lectures and not just the GitHub?
We didn't bring up the first case, but that's a good suggestion for the next one. And in terms of OCW?
Open courseware. Here's the one problem. Like my main security course is all open source, open online. But there's some schools that are very leery about this online model still. I'll leave it at that. I mean, I'll put that in a nice way. There's some schools like Tufts, they haven't made the full investment that schools like MIT and Stanford have.
My quick parting comment is, this kind of course succeeds because the students are next to each other. So you can't necessarily put it online. You need to have the students interact with each other. And I think that's where maybe higher education still survives, is that you can put students together in the same space to crack the same problems. And I think that's probably the value add for a higher education system that you can debate the value of right now.
But the basic questions, the basic videos, like those short tutorials, yeah, those can be, that definitely can be online. That can scale. So thank you so much.
Yeah, we'll be here for more questions.